Mark, where did you find that? I don't know. It just showed up, huh? Never heard that one before, but it's a good one. But we're not talking about catfish. We're talking about bassin. And we have Mark Lassane, the editor, publisher, just kind of sort of owner and floor sweeper. And he does most of the field testing for Bass Angler magazine. And it's a quite a successful publication. And it makes a great read. It's got some good pictures, even some pretty girls in there once in a while. But a lot of big fish. So you need to pick that up, and you cannot. Can you find it online if you wanted to?
You know, you can find it online. You go to pocketmax.com, and they have an online version. You can get it for your iPad, your Kindle, on your computer, however you want it delivered. You can get it, and then we're also at about 3,000 places: Bass Pro, Gander Mountain, Tackle Warehouse. All the great tackle shops carry it, so we're pretty easy to find. And if you have a problem, you can go to bassmag.com and look us up there. We'll tell you how to get it.
Great. Well, it's getting to be late summer, and I suspect there's still some bass out there being caught. The water is probably as warm as it gets throughout the year, right?
The water is pretty warm, so it does make the fishing a little bit tough. The bass get a little bit lethargic. In some bodies of water, the fish go super, super shallow, like 6 to 12 inches of water. In other bodies of water with current, sometimes they'll go out and they'll get really, really deep, 50, 60, 70 feet deep. In some places they're in between. So they're kind of scattered around. I think Fletcher's going to come on in a little while. We're going to talk about fishing some of the new bodies of water, but we can kind of generalize some ways to catch them. This time of year, the fish are chasing shad. They're chasing bait generally. Their metabolism's still pretty high. Water's warm. If you can find some shad, a lot of times those fish are going to go out and they're gonna. They don't care how warm it is. When they see that big school of shad, they're going to go in there and just maul it.
Right.
It's kind of like when you're starving and you see a big old steak. Yeah. On your plate, and you just hammer it.
When you're ocean fishing, a lot of times just right in shallow water is the best place to go because the bait are beating feet. They don't have feet, but they're beating feet to the to the beach to try and get away from the predators.
Exactly.
So they'll go right up into the real shallow water, but the predators they'll follow them right up in there.
Sometimes when you see that bait up in the shallow water and it's up there, it's being real still and stealth-like, you can know that there's some predators close by. So a lot of times that's a good clue, where you can throw some baits that imitate those, imitate the shad and the bluegill and, perch, little baby crappies, things like that. You throw baits that imitate those, and, a lot of times you can do really, really well.
Mark, I want to ask you a question that I've never asked anybody before, because you hear about frogs and the plastics and the different types of shad or substitutes. What will bass eat?
Bass will eat anything that they can get in their mouth. We found them with snakes, mice, frogs, fish, other bass, crawfish, shrimp. They basically will eat anything that gets in their mouth. A lot of times, the bigger the fish, the bigger the bait is. And you throw rubber frogs for them, but they're not always hitting the frog. They don't know if it's a frog. They just know it's something's going to fit in their mouth, and you work it in a way that entices them, and they're going to come up and strike it. That's what's so great about bass fishing. They're just an omnivorous creature. That'll almost strike anything.
They got a big mouth.
One point or another. And they do have a big mouth. What bass do is when they open their mouth, they suck in, big ones can suck in a quart to a half a gallon of water in through their mouth.
Whoa.
So you can imagine it creates like this funnel effect, and it'll suck anything in there and it gets stuck in their mouth, and then they close their mouth and it's pretty much done with.
So just open a mouth, it kind of flows through their mouth out their gills?
It does.
Hmm.
So that's where that big mouth comes in. They use it. I won't say they're a lazy creature, but they're not really fast. Not like a tuna can probably swim 25 miles an hour for half the day, where a bass top speed is about 17 miles an hour, and it's only for a short distance. They're like a fast sprinter.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So when you're using bait, it's always, of course, it's always match the hatch. But what kind of how many different baits would you go through if you're trying to find a bite?
You know, you could go through 100. You know, on any given day. You know, the cool thing about bass fishing is it's all about experiment, and most of, you know, I won't say purists, but hardcore bass guys, we're all throwing artificial lures. So it's, you know, that's the whole fun to it, because bass fishing is like this big giant jigsaw puzzle where you start putting pieces together and then you finally get a picture of what it is, you know, and that puzzle changes. It can change for the minute, for the hour, for the day, for the next day. I mean, you can get the puzzle all dialed in one day, and the next day you have to tear it up, throw it away, and start all over again. You know, one day you can catch them on top water and find a bunch of schooling fish, and the next day you go back there and they're gone. Or you may have to go down 30 feet down deep and catch them. So that's the fun part.
And what is the difference? Is there a difference in the diet between the different strains of bass?
You know, I think all the bass are omnivorous, and they pretty much eat anything. You know, smallmouth and spotted bass, they kind of live in a little bit different environment. Smallmouth like rocks. Spotted bass like drop-offs. But they all eat crawfish. They all eat bait. Smallmouth and spotted bass, they engulf their bait, but they have a lot smaller mouth. So they almost have a tendency to bite more than they do engulf. Like a large mouth, their jawline extends beyond their eye. So their mouth will open up. Like a 5-pound large mouth, this mouth will, you know, may have like a 10-inch diameter.
Yeah.
You know, where it can suck in a pretty big amount of food.
Right.
When you have a 5-pound small mouth, and his mouth only may be a 5-inch diameter. So there's a big difference in there in the amount of food that they can take in.
Well, this is going to be a tough question. It's going to catch you completely off guard. It's not a fair question because you've only got about a minute or so to answer it. If you were bass fishing and you could only take 5 baits, do you know what they'd be?
Well, you know, it all depends on the time of year. I think if it was right now, you know, I would bring a topwater bait, a spinner bait. I would bring a Senko. I would bring a couple of baits, some big plastic baits that I can get down in through the weeds. Because another key is that bass need oxygen. So if the weeds are green, they're going to be producing oxygen, and that's a good place to find them.
Okay, how many was that?
That was 5 if you count 2 different plastics.
Oh, okay.
You know, I may bring out like a spinnerbait and a chatterbait.
Yeah.
You know, crankbaits are good this time of year, but generally you catch a lot of smaller ones on crankbaits this time of year. So, you know, I will throw usually a bigger style bait.
Well, that explains it. That's why I only catch the small ones.
There you go.
You know,
you're in the right place, just throwing the wrong thing.
Well, I've always heard, and I've seen it true, is the bigger the bait, the bigger the fish. What do you think?
That is generally true. Not always. You know, sometimes you can get an area that has big fish, and they're just real finicky.
Yeah.
And they may only want a little small presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That happens.
Right. And then, of course, you can find all these tips in Bass Angler Magazine.
You can find more these tips and many, many more.
All right. Well, we've only got 30 seconds. What's in the current issue?
The fall issue is coming out, and, you know, we're fall. The bait fish are really schooling up. The bass are really going after the bait fish. So we got with about 15 different elite pros. We talked about how to catch these fish in the fall. You know, if you want to find out how to catch fish in the fall, you pick up that fall issue, and you'll be amazed at what you'll find.
Gotcha. Okay, well, we're going to have to take a quick break. And when we come back, well, let's see if we can get Brandon Cotton, the marketing manager for Okuma, who's become one of my favorite equipment companies, and I'm sure you're familiar with them also. So we'll be back with you in just a few minutes, so don't go too far. You are listening to Fish Talk Radio.
First named La Paz in 1566, the fourth largest municipality in Mexico still has a provincial Mexican atmosphere. On the Sea of Cortez, the most biodiverse body of water in the world, La Paz has year-round world-class fishing. With a rich history of pearls, pirates, and legendary fishing, La Paz in Baja Sur makes for the perfect fishing vacation. Spring in La Paz, you catch trophy pargo, giant yellowtail, and sierra. Find more at VivaLaPaz.com. Viva La Paz!
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
S-A-N-D-O-S is how to spell luxury resort in downtown Cabo San Lucas. Santos Finisterre Los Cabos is the only five-star all-inclusive on the beach next to the marina in Cabo San Lucas. Angler-friendly Santos Finisterre Los Cabos is now an affordable world-class resort with the finest accommodations, food, and location anywhere. Enjoy your Cabo fishing adventure as you never have. Visit Santos.com and use discount code FISHTALK.
World-class golf, fishing, and diving in the clear, warm waters of the Sea of Cortez with a true five-star resort. The Grand Heritage Hotel and Resort at Costa Baja, great value and without the hustle of other parts of Baja. On the white sand beach with Espiritu Santos Island minutes away. Signature restaurants, pools, and accommodations for an intimate weekend, weddings, or corporate events. On the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
Kentucky Lake and Barkley, Sardis, Ross, Burnett, Toledo Bend, Rayburn, and Conroe, he won't forget.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and we have, of course, Mark Lassane, editor of Bass Angler Magazine, editor, publisher, and chief executive. And he also has a chance to get out in the field once in a while and test some of the product. And one of the products that he likes and he likes to test is Okuma. And they are a company that, you know what, I think that we just happen to have somebody on here that can tell us more about it. His name is Brandon Cotton, and he is the marketing manager for Okuma. And maybe he can give us just a real brief history and kind of find out where they've been, where they're going, and a little bit more about the Okuma line. Brandon, would you mind coming on and joining us?
Hey, John, how you doing? Thanks for having me on today.
Gotcha. Now, just in case, Brandon is such a busy guy. He's always either coming or going. Right now, I think he's gone, but he's in his car with the speakerphone on, so we apologize if the sound isn't the best, but you sound fine, Brandon. So why don't you give us an idea about Okuma, how long you've been there, and how much things have changed since you've been there.
Sure, sure. Hopefully this is a little bit better. I turned down my air conditioning a little bit here. So,
about that. Okay.
No, no worries. I've been at over here at Okuma now about 6.5 years. Be 7 years coming up here in February in another, 5 or 6 months. Our company has grown quite a bit in the last probably 6, 7, 8 years or so. We actually, it's a global company, but we represent Okuma USA, and we've been in the States here coming up on, be 20 years, I believe, in 2016. So we're still fairly young by industry standards, you know, quite a few other rod and reel manufacturers been around quite a bit longer. But the last, six, 7 years, we've seen quite a bit of success, not just in our reel line, but also our rod line. Our rod sales have spiked quite a bit. The quality of our products has increased tremendously, just based on our R&D research, a lot better QC in the last 6-7 years or so. And we've been able to market and do quite a few things to help enhance that. And it's really shown in both our sales and also just out in the market. We've had a lot more people approach us, a lot better placement at the retail level. And then we've also gotten a lot of great guys such as Scott Martin, Jacob Wheeler, behind it and everything like that. So everything's been kind of firing on all cylinders, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brandon, I have to say that when I was first introduced to Okuma about 10 years or so ago, I wasn't all that impressed. And then about, 3, 4, 5 years later, I was kind of reintroduced to it, and I go, wow, this is really good stuff. And I would put it on a level up against anybody, you know, especially any major company that produces the whole array of rods, reels, and of course your spinning reels have always been well known, but your quality and of course the quality versus price makes it a no brainer. But the quality and what you do now is just, if you haven't tried one for a while, you need to pick it up and just play with it, or even take it out for a test drive.
Yep. And one thing I wanted to mention, John, is from a product standpoint, we actually came out with Makaira about 5 years ago or so, and it was one of those things where we kind of decided, hey, we're either going to put up or shut up, and we're going to make a product that's going to be top of the line stuff, and then from there, once that succeeds, everything else is going to trickle down from that. You know, as a lot of manufacturers like to call it, it's your flagship product. And that was the Makaira. And ever since, we've done significantly well with that product line. And then like we planned and like we sort of, you know, were looking to do, we sort of trickled out that success into our other product lines, our low-profile bait casters, our rod lines, our spinning stuff, our the rest of our salt line. As you mentioned, it's not just us sort of talking about it. We've actually had a tremendous response from anglers and consumers, dealers, and everything else. And it's just one of those things where you start focusing on a lot of the key stuff. And that's one of the things I found working here was that, you know, there's different things that go into products and there's different materials and so forth, and really getting yourself educated and learning about the key components and what makes this better than the other one. Really it helps anglers make better choices. I'm not going to come on here and say, Okuma is the best choice for everything and everything else is crap, you know, because that's not the case. But I think that once you learn about stuff and with the internet and with everything else, and there's, you know, go up to the reps, you know, if you're at a consumer show or wherever you're at, just kind of educate yourself more on the manufacturing side of what stuff's, you know, made from and the materials and how it's made and why this is important. I could tell you all day till I'm blue in the face. Oh, our reels have helical cut gears in certain products. And you'll say, well, what the heck does that have to do with anything? But until you realize what it helps out, you know, as far as the smoothness and the gear meshing and all that kind of stuff, you know, then it kind of dawns on anglers. They're like, oh, that's why they do that, or that's why this makes sense. And because every manufacturer is going to give you a lot of technical terms, and those are great. But until you really understand what those mean, what those do for you, you know, a lot of times it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other. So,
well, Brandon, in the information age, you know, word spreads fast. So if you screw up, everybody's going to know about it the next day.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting about that from here is that, you know, we've just, we've kind of embraced our position and our success in a way that we've been able to, if there is a problem, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. It does happen sometimes. You embrace that and you take it and say, look, hey, we're this is what we're doing to fix it, or this is what we're doing to improve it for the next generation. And if you can embrace that, then that's what makes you successful.
Okay. Well, you know, one other thing is that when you're talking about reels these days, They can be fairly complicated, and sometimes you don't want to tackle a repair yourself. Remember the old pins, you know, you take off four screws and, you know, you pull it apart, replace the drag washers, grease it up, put it back together. But reels today are, you know, you better know what you're doing if you pull it apart and you want to try and put it back together. So what kind of a program do you have for that?
Well, you know, it's pretty neat. We actually, that's another area of our business that we've really strived to, you know, stay at the top of, and that's customer service. We actually boast a 48-hour turnaround in-house. What that means is you call us up, our technicians or our customer service guys will give you what's called an RA, a return authorization number. You send the product in, and for reels, it's a 48-hour in-house turnaround. So basically two business working days, and then we'll have that back and on the way out back to you.
Wow. Well, so I mean, if you're getting ready to go fishing next week, that's important.
Yep.
And
sure
knowing me, I usually don't do that until the day before. But
But it's not something that's going to take, you know, weeks on end. We like to make it quick. So.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about the Okuma rods.
Well, it's kind of neat. One of the things that we've sort of focused on is technique specific, and when I say that, it's not just, you know, hey, we have a bass line, here are the actions. It's stuff where we have a bass line where we actually technique specific. Hey, this is the drop shot rod, or this is a rod that we do have all purpose rods, but we've also got other stuff that really draws into. There's different techniques to all different fisheries. One of the most successful rod lines we've had is another one is the Pacific Northwest is our SST line, which stands for salmon, steelhead, and trout. And there's different techniques, and we make specific actions for that. So our rod line has kind of gone that direction where we've tried to design specific series of rods that are technique specific to certain fisheries.
I'm sorry, Brandon, but it sounds like someone's in the water right now. But if you don't mind, we have a little sort of surprise guest. We have Fletcher Schreirock, who is an elite professional angler that just kind of joined in with us. And Fletcher, if you have any questions for the marketing manager for Okuma, now's your chance. We've just been talking about rods and earlier a little bit about reels. So I don't know if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to talk to Brandon about.
Okay. Yeah, I was just tuned in just a second ago. I heard him talk about technique specific rods, and I think that's an awesome line to have. You know, from the beginner angler to all the way to the advanced anglers, having rods that are catered to the specific general bass fishing techniques that we use. It's great to help a beginning angler as well to help them understand what they need to do certain techniques. So I think that's great that you guys have that going.
Yeah, and I think that's what we've sort of reached out to a lot of these guys, you know, from elite or pro anglers, you know, such as yourself, all the way to the guys that fish local stuff and just kind of do it here and there on the weekend, maybe a couple tournaments a year. And, you know, a lot of the guys are hungry for, you know, hey, what rod do I use? And I just want it made simple for me. I want something where I want it to be able to pick it up. You know, is it labeled that way? Is it this? You know, what do I use for frog fishing, or what do I use for drop shot? What do I use for a jerk bait rod that, you know, I need something to suspend for 20 seconds before I twitch it again? You know, what's the best action?
Right.
I think if you can simplify that, but keep them really interested in that kind of aspect, I think.
Fletcher, are you at a weigh-in or something? There's a lot of background noise.
No, actually, I was just checking into the hotel here.
Okay. Not a problem. We've only got about less than a minute, so before the next break.
Wow, time flies.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, I just kind of, there was a rod company that started with an SH that came out with a butterfly jig, and then you had to buy the rod to go with it. And I thought that was, wait a minute, what's this? It sounds like a marketing ploy. But the rod specific, I think, is something different than that. This is not a gimmick.
Yeah, no, this is something that a lot of manufacturers.
Each rod has their own specific action, so they've actually done a really good job with the Scott Martin line for several different aspects. They have awesome punching rods, great cranking rods.
Okay. Well, Brandon, we're going to have to bring you back on again. Actually, if you've got time, you know, if you want to stick around, we're going to be talking to Fletcher, and the subject is going to be if you're on a lake you haven't fished before, what do you do? So if you'd like to stick around, that'd be great. But we're going to have to take a short break right now, and we're going to be right back with you with Talk Radio, and find us on fishtalkradio.com. Go to the front page, listen to this show as many times as you like, as soon as you can. Be right back.
Oh, yeah.
The road stretches for miles in front of you, and with the Ram 1500, you'll be able to reach mile after open mile. It gets a best-in-class 25 miles per gallon highway, so your destination won't just be determined by your gas gauge, but by your gauge for achievement. And the Ram 1500 is the first-ever back-to-back Motor Trend Truck of the Year. Guts. Glory. Ram. See your local Ram dealer today for great deals. EPA estimated 25 mpg highway based on V6 4x2.
If you like the show you are listening to right now, you can listen to it and many more just like it on Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. Fishing, hunting, boating, and the rest of the great outdoors, 24/7, 365 on Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. Download the free Reno Viola's Outdoor Radio app or visit WRVORadio.com online to see the lineup and schedule. That's Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. And enjoy the great outdoors.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world-famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll-free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
First named La Paz in 1566, the fourth largest municipality in Mexico still has a provincial Mexican atmosphere. On the Sea of Cortez, the most biodiverse body of water in the world, La Paz has year-round world-class fishing. With a rich history of pearls, pirates, and legendary fishing, La Paz in Baja Sur makes for the perfect fishing vacation. Spring in La Paz, you catch trophy pargo, giant yellowtail, and sierra. Find more at VivaLaPaz.com. Viva La Paz!
Bass Angler Magazine simply brings you more. If you want to learn the latest technique, start winning tournaments, or just catch more bass, then Bass Angler Magazine is for you. Go to www.bassmag.com. Click on the order link and use the promo code FBR. Go to www.bassmag.com. Bass Angler Magazine, bassmag.com. It will be the best $20 you've ever spent.
Fix me some coffee and a hundred bun. Jumped in my pickup, gave her the gas. I'm going out to catch a 5-pound bass.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan, and we got apparently Fletcher is going to get ready to go out fishing again, but I don't think he's interested in any 5-pound bass. He's not in the class that he's in.
I think he'd be happy to have some 5-pound bass.
Yeah, not in the league that he's in.
That's good.
But, well, first of all, Brandon, what rod would you use for a 5-pound bass?
Well, I guess it would depend on what I'm throwing, but I'd move it from our line. I'd use a TCS rod for sure.
Okay. And Fletcher travels a lot and fishes tournaments, and there are a lot of semi-pro bass anglers. I mean, there's probably thousands and thousands. You don't find any professional trout anglers or very few big game anglers, but there's got to be thousands of professional and semi-professional anglers, but there's very few people that actually make a living at it. And so I think that Fletcher belongs to a very elite group. So what's the life of a professional bass angler, Fletcher?
Well, first off, I appreciate you saying that. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to do what I do for a living right now. Pretty much, man, it's really busy. You know, there's a lot of things that go on. First of all, I want to say I love what I do. Don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of work involved, too. You know, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that people might not take into consideration. You think, oh, this is, you know, you just, all you do is fish for a living, right? Well, there's just tons of travel, tons of planning, just a lot of work really goes involved to doing what I have to do. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but there's definitely a lot, you know, from dealing with sponsors to fishing the tournaments, to practicing for tournaments, all the different bodies of water, to studying up, you know, trying to keep your game sharp and still just fishing yourself. You know, there's just a lot of moving parts to doing what I do, but I love I love it for sure.
Now, Fletcher, when you go to a pond or a lake, or normally it would be a lake that I guess that you fish in, you can fish in the rivers and streams, but when you go to let's say a lake that for some reason you've never fished before, but there's probably not too many of those, but let's just say that you go to a lake that you've never fished before, and of course you get to pre-fish it for a day or so, but when you get there, you don't really know anything about it. So what do you do? Do you talk to other people or what?
Let me break in and clarify that a little bit. Because you know what? Most guys, when they go out, they go fishing, they go, okay, I'm going to the lake, whether they've been there or not. They show up at the ramp, and then they go, they look at the water and they go, okay, well, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's where we could use some help from a guy like Fletcher. You know, he does it day in and day out. And I could bet that he puts his boat on the water and he instinctively knows, you know, about 20 things that he wants to try out. You know, so that's kind of like, you know, with most of us guys that, you know, just kind of fish here and there and every now and once in a while, we don't have that instinct. We don't really know. So we need a guy like Fletcher to kind of guide us along and help us with, you know, what do we look for?
Fletcher, the pressure's on you.
Yeah, Mark, I think you really understand a lot, too, just what you talked about yourself, for sure. Very good angle yourself, you know. But, no, you hit on some very good things. I mean, it's very hard to just sit and just say a couple things, like what's going to help someone catch fish at different lakes. There's so many things to it. Like you said, you build an instinct on what you need to be doing. But I think everyone's instincts, a lot of people go about things differently. You know, if I was to tell someone to go to a new lake, what to look for, things like that, I think they need to do research before they get there, understand the seasonal patterns of how bass move, what they're going to be doing. It's obviously a lot different in the springtime than it would be in the summer. People need to take that into consideration, do a little bit of research. I mean, it's very easy now with a smartphone. You can just type it in, you know, on your way and just figure out, hey, are the fish typically shallow this time of year? Are they typically deep this time of year? And things like that before they get to the lake that can really help eliminate the process. But I think with bass fishing, for the most part, if I go to a new lake, I want to show up and I want to fish things I can see, you know, first off, unless I know for sure that they're extremely deep or if it's extremely hot in the middle of the summer. But even then, there's always shallow bass to be caught. And I think if a guy just hones in on those skills and worries about how to catch a shallow bass, he can catch fish practically year round. Just fishing objects. What I mean by fishing things he can see, break it down by boat docks, you know, lay down trees, riprap, rock banks, whether it be grass, you know, lily pads, things like that, and start going through that process of elimination of just fishing visible objects instead of getting too far into fishing offshore, which takes a lot more time. So that's what I would recommend, you know, to start out telling someone how to fish a new lake.
What about electronics? Do you use those?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I can say about fishing with electronics is it takes a lot of time to understand what you're looking at. And not only that, a lot of times with electronics, you're looking more for the home run or the mother load of bass, typically when you're using electronics. And the problem with that is, it sounds great, but the problem with that is it's very time consuming, and you may or may not find a school of bass, depending on how the lake's fished and what year it is. You can almost always typically fish visible targets, things that you can see, and go out there and, you know, start catching fish immediately, or at least go through the process knowing that there's fish on one type of visible cover. And you just need to figure out what type of cover they're on, whether it be grass beds or, like I said, riprap or whatever, and then what lures you're going to go about catching those fish on that specific cover. Would you agree with what I'm saying, Mark?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, a lot of times that's what I would do.
Well, Fletcher, what you just mentioned, I'm just kind of thinking while you're saying, is that that's probably true for almost any type of fish.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't get to do much fishing for anything else. I mean, I'm from Ohio, so we pretty well have bass and bluegill and crappie and some catfish, you know. We don't have, I don't get to do any saltwater fishing. Yeah. I would love to, but I never have.
Right.
So I can't really say. But, yeah, I mean, every species obviously has its own twist, but I think the basic story of what I was saying, do a little bit of research. And, the fish obviously move all the time, and there's just certain tactics you can always use to catch them.
Sorry. Is that is Brandon, are you still there? I think, okay, there he goes. Let's go ahead and continue on. But as we've got in this segment, we've got about another 3 or 4 minutes. But let's kind of continue the subject. But yes, when you're when you're fishing in the ocean, you're always looking for floating objects and current breaks and scum lines and on the edge, and those are normally the first place you go. And of course, when you're in a stream, you're looking at if he wants to, you're looking at, rocks and bent over trees and things where they might be hiding. But so I guess it's kind of universal. But what you said about fishing the top, you're not going to use electronics for that.
Yeah.
Not too much.
Whenever you're using your electronics, you're searching more for things that are things you can't see, and it takes a lot more time. I'm sure salt water is the same way. It just takes a lot more time to get dialed in and figure out how to catch fish with your electronics, because you can't see what you're looking at. It takes a lot of time. I mean, the technology with our electronics nowadays is great, but you just take so much. You can't really see it, so you're covering a lot of dead water to try to find that mother load of fish, whereas fishing the things you can see and knowing what they live around that you can see, you can go through that process of elimination a lot
quicker. Like scanning the horizon instead of looking at your feet.
Exactly, exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would definitely recommend to someone who just wanted to go fish a new lake and, just go fishing and learn. That's that's the best way to go for sure.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
I think an angler that is either a good bass fisherman or a good saltwater fisherman or a good trout fisherman, you can use that for, and cross over in different species. So I'm a bass guy, but we go out in the ocean and sometimes we'll be over a point that's 2,000 feet deep. We'll be looking for tuna that are, schooling on the point, 2,000 feet above, or rockfish that come up on
the
pump.
Well, we do have Brandon back on here again. And, Brandon, we've just been talking about fishing a new lake. And, what Fletcher is saying is instead of looking straight down and trying to find what you can't see, is first thing you do is fish what you can see. And to me, that sounds like it works with pretty much any kind of fish.
Yeah. I kind of heard the tail end of somebody talking about tuna there for a second.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think like anything, the best fishing I've ever had pretty much is what I can see structure. That's true for salt and freshwater for the type of fish that I like to do. I do some inshore stuff here in Southern California, fishing calicos and spotted bay bass and so forth. And, the kind of the boiler rock stuff, tail stuff that you can actually see. Their structure there. The fish, that's their habitat you're going right after. And I think the same is true when I do a lot of my bass fishing, even freshwater. Starting there,
Well, so. Brandon, before we finish up, do you want to make a couple of comments on bass rods that Okuma puts together, and what would you put together for somebody like Fletcher for rod and reel?
Well, I think our biggest popular, most effective combo has definitely got to be the GPS rod with our Velios reel. That's what a lot of our two major guys on the tour, Scott and Jacob, those guys fish those exclusively pretty much. And then even with our Helios rod line, those are a little bit stiffer action, but those are really good. We got a really good frogging rod in that line, as well as some of our micro guides in that one.
Well, Fletcher, we're just about out of time, but I just make a quick comment is that it seems as though the micro braid in spinning reels have become quite popular for bass.
You're saying the braided line or the micro guides? I'm sorry.
No, the microfiber braided.
Oh, yeah.
Micro braid.
That's definitely a big deal. I use spider wire braid line, and honestly, like all of my spinning equipment now is 100% braid, and obviously I like to tie a fluorocarbon leader to the braid just for visibility reasons and some abrasion resistance, because braided line isn't real good around rock and hard stuff, but that's absolutely 100% of my lineup now.
Well, it looks like they're chasing us out of here, and Brandon can be found at Okuma. Just type in Okuma. It's everywhere. Everybody's got it.
Yep.
And then we want to thank again Mark Lassane from Bass Angler Magazine and bassmag.com. Is that right?
Bassmag.com.
There you go. Easy enough. And Fletcher, good luck in the, for the rest of the year. We appreciate you coming on and joining us. You are listening to Fish Talk Radio.